Underwriting can be customized to fit your promotional budget and lets you spread awareness of your work to a wide audience, all while supporting hands-on radio in Greene and Columbia counties. To learn more, visit wgxc.org/underwriting or call 518-697-7400.
To 2 on WGXC 90.7 FM and WGXC.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the Hudson Opera House, a multi-art center located at 327 Warren Street in Hudson. The Hudson Opera House offers performances, exhibitions, readings, workshops, classes for children and adults, and more. Visit hudsonoperahouse.org for more information or call 518-822-1438.
To the Prison Voices Project, a radio storytelling project highlighting the voices of people impacted by the prison system. The Prison Voices Project airs on the second and fourth Thursday of every month from 10 to 11 a.m. on WGXC Hands-On Community Radio 90.7 FM. If you are listening to the program and would like to share your story with the prison system, or you have ideas for the program, or you would like to get involved, please write to us at 704 Columbia Street, 2nd floor, Hudson, New York, 12534.
I wish I could give all I'm longing to give. I wish I could live like I'm longing.
Hello, thank you so much for tuning in. I am your host, Corey Fisher Hoffman. And today's show is about restorative justice. So before going to a clip to explain better what restorative justice is, I just want to make a couple announcements. So the first announcement is about an upcoming local event that's going to take place in Hudson. So it's a history, art, and dialogue about life in a girls' prison, June 8th through 9th and 9th in Hudson, New York. So this is put on by the Prison Public Memory Project, and it's called If These Walls Could Talk. It's history, art, and dialogue about life in a girl's prison. It's Saturday, June 8th and Sunday, June 9th, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Oliver Bronson House, 50 Worth, which is Worth Avenue, which is in Hudson on the grounds of the Hudson Correctional Facility. And it's free of charge, no admission, open to the public. So that is one announcement. And right now we are going to turn to a clip by an expert, Brenda Morrison, the director of Restorative Justice Center at Simon Fraser University on restorative justice.
Restorative Gender justice represents a paradigm change from thinking about justice as a mechanism for social control to think about justice as a mechanism for social engagement. We know that people that are engaged in healthy ways, socially and emotionally, make better decisions. And so restorative justice seeks to be socially and emotionally intelligent justice. The one way to think about how restorative justice differs from a criminal justice process is the questions we ask. So in a criminal justice process, we ask the question, what happened? Who did it? What do they deserve? In a restorative justice process, we ask a different set of questions. We said, what happened? Whose obligations are these? And what do we need to do to right the wrongs? We know that injustice creates social emotional harms to people and relationships. And so restorative justice is about repairing those relationships and repairing the harm done. An important part of a restorative justice process is we ask people, how are you affected? And we don't ask those questions in a criminal justice process. We focus on the facts. So we know that victims' voices are not heard strongly in a courtroom. Victims' voices are heard strongly in a restorative justice process. So what we know, the victims who participate in the restorative justice process, they're more satisfied. Their satisfaction in the justice system is increased. They're less likely to seek revenge, you know, following the injustice. We also know that their experience of post-traumatic stress is greatly reduced. Participation in a restorative justice process, while it takes great courage to come face to face with the person that's offended you, has huge social emotional benefits. People go back to work, they don't have that fear every time they go by the place where the offense occurs. Injustice is a very visceral feeling, and restorative justice, because it's emotionally intelligent, repairs that visceral aftermath that we hold within us when we experience injustice. Any place where relationships matter, people benefit from restorative justice. In our families, in our workplaces, in our communities, having the skills and the framework to think about resolving conflict, and conflict is a normal part of life, it can either shut us down or it can provide us an opportunity to learn and grow and better understand each other. And that's what restorative justice is.
Show me forgiveness, for I have been lost.
Bjork with Show Me Forgiveness. And before that, you heard Brenda Morrison, who is the director for the Center for Restorative Justice at Simon Fraser University, speaking about sort of the underlying principles of restorative justice. So just some background on why I chose to do today's show focusing on restorative justice. For those of you who have been tuning into the Prison Voices Project for the last few months, I've been covering a lot of the issues around juvenile justice and a process in New York State called PINS, Person in Need of Supervision. And this is a process that is sort of the local example of what we're seeing nationally of a school-to-prison pipeline, so rooting children from the educational system into the criminal justice system. Many community members in Hudson, as well as Staley B. Keith Social Justice Center, and many members of the Hudson City School District have been coming together in a series of panels and meetings to really discuss this issue of juvenile justice and PINS. And from these processes, the idea for restorative justice has surfaced. The idea has been to try to come up with a diversion program. So instead of rooting children from the educational system into the prison system, diverting them instead in a process that can actually work to build and restore our community and repair the harm that has been done by the behavior or the criminal act. And so it's been through these conversations about a need for restorative justice locally that I began to do some research myself to plan a show focused on restorative justice. So I'm going to play now a clip that is of some of these panels and conversations around restorative justice, how they've come up locally in Hudson, and what energy is being moved to take this to another level. So this is a restorative justice segment based on a recent event that took place at Time and Space Limited in the Time to Talk series. And so you will hear from people who are involved in trying to figure out an alternative to suspension, an alternative to incarceration for youth, sort of how some of these conversations have been going. So here it is. This is a clip mostly from events in Hudson. And also I brought in some audio from experts in the field of restorative justice. As summer approaches, many people are getting excited about gardening, hiking, and barbecues. Community members and school officials, on the other hand, are concerned about how a lack of structured activities often leads to rising crime rates. Continuing on the conversation about juvenile justice and a need to find alternatives to the PINS process, or Persons in Need of Supervision, Time and Space Limited in Hudson hosted a community panel exploring alternatives to the PINS system. The panel included Honorable Richard Kowick from Columbia County, and Mr. Lee Nguyen, former director of Tyron Boys and former assistant director of Brookwood Secure Facility within the New York State Office of Children and Family Services. The panel was co-moderated by Linda Mussman of Time and Space Limited and guest moderator Mr. Andre Morris, a reentry specialist with the Albany-based Trinity Alliance. Lee Nguyen reflected on his experience working with incarcerated youth and their desire to actually be listened to.
Listen to me. I have something to say. I am smart. I am intelligent. I just need somebody to invest in me. Show me you care. I may piss you off the first time. You're like, forget that kid. Columbia County, Albany County, New York City, Mississippi, Georgia, I don't care where you are. People are people. You talk to people, like I say, meet them where they are, but you know where you want to go. You got to meet them where they are first.
So what happens to these children that they are good kids and they're being intimidated by the adults and they happen to fall into the wrong hands or do the wrong things and they're not being explained and they're just being punished, sent away? And this is, to in my eyes, that's the training of becoming a professional criminal.
And then when you send them to these institutions like this, you already put in their mind that this is where they belong. So when you put them in their minds that this is where they belong, when they come out, they're going to keep going and going, then they're going to end up in places.
That was Tiffany Grieca from the Staley B. Keith Social Justice Center and Andre Morris. Judge Kowick expressed his enthusiasm for diversion programs based on his experience on the bench in city court.
One of the things I enjoyed about the city court bench, particularly with kids who did stuff that might be classified the first time through more as stupid than a crime, and they recognize it, is that I was a strong proponent of community service as a way to as an alternative to a fine or an alternative to even a disposition. If you're willing to do some community service up front, then I'm willing to consider, with the consent of the district attorney, having the charge dismissed. And I think it was pretty effective.
echoing Judge Coick, Quinton Cross of SBK stated a need for a diversion program for youth.
In order for us to provide an alternative, we must have an alternative. And I think it's definitely something to look at, because these kids are, you know, whether it's through the school or through the community, at the end of the day, it's prison. You know, it's just the first step till you get to prison. And if we're serious about it, I think there's really needs to be some diversion programs and some alternatives out there.
One of the alternatives suggested was offered by Vera Michelson, who explained her work on a community accountability board in Albany.
When someone commits an offense, a nonviolent offense, the judge and the DA have to agree that this is a person that could go before the accountability board instead of going to jail. And the idea is to have them come. They have to understand what they're going to be doing, and they have to accept that, and they have to accept responsibility for the offense that they did. I mean, those are some of the things that have to happen in order to have a successful restorative justice process, and that's what the community accountability board is. So they come, they meet with people from the community. All these people are trained, and they meet with people from the community. So it'd be one person, maybe three or four people. And these people are, you know, regular people from the neighborhoods. It's really good if you have somebody who's been on the block for, you know, maybe known as the auntie on the block or the grandma on the block, and she knows maybe the family, and it makes it really difficult. Sometimes they would rather go to jail than face that and have that conversation. So they come in, and you have 2 hours with the person, and they it's a method of how you get into this conversation. What happened? This is not supposed to be judgmental at all. Just tell us what happened. Make us like we were there, okay? So, and how did you feel when this was going on? What were you thinking about? You know, what, and then you just go, somebody was talking about people don't ask questions. These are the questions nobody ever asks anybody either. What were you thinking? You know, what was going on? What happened? Not what did you do and you shouldn't have done that, you know? So this starts the conversation, and it's, can be pretty amazing what happens in that 2 hours. So then it gets to another stage with what happened. What kind of harm do you think was created? So that's a difficult question sometimes for people to answer. So they may say, you know, well, it's obvious that they created harm to their girlfriend when they were trying to bang the door down and scared her or whatever. But maybe they didn't, was anybody else around? So you start asking questions, always asking questions. Was anybody else around? Did anybody else see this? You know, well, I heard some crying down the hallway. You know if that was, who that was? Well, I think it was a child. Oh, okay. And then, you know, they took you to jail, and then what happened? Who picked you up from jail? My mom. Was she working at the time? Did she have leave? You know, so you just go through all these things that people don't think about. Towards the end of it, it's a question of how do you think that the repair can be made.
In search for a diversion program to reroute the school-to-prison pipeline, address the root causes of criminal behavior, and address larger community issues, the idea of restorative justice became the focus of the conversation. Howard Zare, an expert in restorative justice, speaks to the failings of the criminal justice system and to restorative justice, its strengths, and its ability to better meet the needs of victims of crimes.
One of the things I like about restorative justice is it's a way to help people stop and think about the assumptions they make every day, like the assumptions about justice, and to have a discussion about, well, what are the real needs in this situation and so forth. To me, one of the starting points is helping those in the criminal justice system understand what their system does right, but also what does wrong. And the criminal justice system does not do very much for victims. Often it re-traumatizes them. It doesn't hold offenders accountable in a meaningful sense. And by that I mean in the sense of taking responsibility, understanding what they did, taking responsibility for it. And it leaves out the larger community. In fact, it often re-victimizes or creates new wounds in the community. So there's some strength to the legal system, strengths to the criminal justice system, but it's got some pretty serious defects. And part of the key is just helping people to understand both of those things. There is also a large industry behind the criminal justice system that wants it to stay the way it is. Some people think that it sounds like it's soft on crime, whereas we know that it's really very difficult to take responsibility, but it looks like sometimes that maybe it's soft on crime. And some people just don't care about victims, frankly. I mean, it's not in their job description. So yeah, they admit that victims aren't being served well, but that's not my deal. That's not my job.
The following clip, pulled from a YouTube video on restorative justice process in a Lansing school district in Michigan, reviews the basic process.
Emotions can run high, but the facilitator works through the structured process to make sure an atmosphere of respect is maintained. The process is designed to get participants to think through three main points. The first is to gain a common understanding of the incident that brought them to the circle. This starts with the question, what happened? Next, the facilitator asks questions to help everyone understand who was affected by the incident and how they were affected. In the third and final part of the process, the facilitator helps the group make decisions about what needs to be done to heal the harm.
Principal Abitabel of Hudson High was in attendance, and he stated an interest to work towards alternative diversions to pins. Towards the end of the panel, the mood in the crowd was clear. Enough talking and time to put a plan into action. This is Claire Cousin.
I'm a little tired of sitting at these panels. I feel like everybody is speaking about what they know the issue is. We invite politicians to come that have the authority to change these things. We invite people from other counties that come. And so far this year, since we've started SBK, have given us lists and lists and lists of ways we could change this. But nothing's happened yet. Like, when does it start? When do we stop talking? Because everything that everybody has said, I've done that. I've been sent away for 30 days for something my parents could have handled. But they were talked into putting me on pins. So then I was sent away into a facility for something that my parents could have handled themselves. Now, I've came back from my evaluation. I dropped out of high school because I wasn't welcome. I have a child now. I'm a single mom. I've been in between different colleges. I still don't have this type of support that I feel like I need. But I see kids running around the community that are just like me. But when do they get the help that everybody's talking about they need? When are you guys going to start? When are we going to start? Instead of a panel every month from judges and commissioners and all these different people, when does it start?
Following the panel, members of Hudson City School District, the Staley B. Keith Social Justice Center, and the Reentry Task Force of Columbia County, as well as others, held an educational meeting where they reviewed different models of restorative justice and began brainstorming how to implement a process in the Hudson City School District. It looks like restorative justice is coming to Hudson, New York. From Hudson, New York, I am Corey Fisher Hoffman for the Prison Voices Project and WGXC.
Time. 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 blinded with pain. A new moon opens, each day as the moon fades. Feel yourself disintegrate and catch a better way. Streaming off lines in the wrong side, falling off time in a rhythm designed for living a life unspoken. These are words of no one, mumbling omens to those that can't speak. Held safely just out of arm's reach, but maybe one day we might conquer the light and walk blinded with our heart as a guide. And stay silent with an awkward pride of being alive. And each ring's end, every being ascends to the next. Only through your flesh we bend for eternity toward infinity, then bodies braided, setting the sun. We lay naked as one and work in the dark, doing what we can and giving who we are. Back into pure collapse. When you answer that, it'll be the only real thing left to collect with true perspective. I laugh at my fading reflection, and every mirror cracks, you'll catch the shrapnel with swollen fingers and bleed out noise with a voice that lingers long as ether. On either end of it, the pen is in my grip. Documentalist fits moving through an abyss. Sky splits in a separate vision, and every molecule melds with this one. Every molecule melds with this one. Next world. Lifetimes lived on a minute. In the grid, I might just find a finish when it aligns a different side and rhythm designed for living a life and falling all time. Lifetimes lived on a minute. I might just find a finish. Work in the dark, do what we can and give who we are in every part. That is the task, to do what we can and give what we have. Work in the dark, do what we can and give who we are in every part. That is the task, to do what we can and give what we have. Work in the dark, do what we can and give who we are in every part. Doubt is in passing, that is the task. To do what we can and give what we have. Lifetimes lived on a minute. Next world.
That was The Find by The Find. And you are listening to the Prison Voices Project on WGXC, ACRA, Catskill, Hudson, Green, Columbia Counties, Hands-On Community Radio, 90.7 FM, or you can stream live at WGXC.org. Thanks so much for tuning in. Today's show is talking about restorative justice. And before you heard The Find, there was a segment played about restorative justice and a conversation that's been going on in Hudson, a search for alternatives of dealing with youth incarceration and the school-to-prison pipeline, starting to look towards restorative justice as a possible solution and way to reroute children out of the school-to-prison pipeline and instead repair the harm through really addressing some key questions about what happened, how do we repair the harm. And so this process is starting to be formed here in Hudson. There is a follow-up meeting that will take place Monday, June 17th at 5:30 p.m., tentatively at the Chamber of Commerce. If you'd like more information, you can email me at theprisonvoicesproject@gmail.com. That's prisonvoicesproject@gmail.com. We're going to continue with this theme of restorative justice and hear from two experts. Dominic Barter, who's often seen as the definitive restorative justice expert who started the process in favelas and poor communities in Brazil, and Kat Miller from the Gandhian Center. And they'll speak just briefly about restorative justice in general and what it can really do in terms of building community and addressing harm and creating alternatives to the current system that we have. So this is Dominic Bartel and Kat Miller.
Creating a system that reflects the community is in itself a community-building process. When painful or violent conflict occurs, we actually create more security for our communities when we move towards each other rather than away from each other.
Martin Luther King said, if you want peace, work for justice. And we really need a justice system that is fair.
Ideally, we're looking not to replace one justice system with another, but to begin questioning and dialoguing around justice, using as a basis what we already have.
At the Gandhi Institute, we don't just want to be kind of give a historical look back to what people like King or Gandhi did. We're wanting to move those ideas and principles forward in the world And for us, restorative practices are an opportunity to really embody nonviolence in a systemic way, in a way that our community desperately needs.
We started in communities in the mid-90s in Rio de Janeiro, where I live. And these were communities that were off limits to most of what the state does. They were run by armed gangs. We started with conversations with the community around what it was that was working, what wasn't working, and the way they responded to conflict. And slowly, through experimenting, we started to notice certain dynamics, and we would try to repeat the things that worked well and drop the things that weren't working. And that's how the work developed.
It's not just enough to say that it's at a level of equality. There's additional steps necessary.
A restorative circle is a gathering of those people who are experiencing painful or violent conflict. And they come together to do three things. First, to re-establish the ability to hear each other. The second thing is to find out the good reasons why the horrible things happened, as in what were the underlying values that people were attempting to take care of when they said those painful words, when they did those painful things. And thirdly, to decide what it is that they want to do next. What I want to do is introduce restorative practices within a wider context of restorative systems. Of communities that are self-regenerating, of organizations, including the university, which are beginning to think critically and creatively about how they can create the conditions for resilient community life. And in Rochester, we can see that context happening in several different areas.
There's one project that's happening here in Rochester now where they're being used to help people who are coming out of prison to transition back in with their families and in with their communities. My particular hope coming up is to help advance the understanding among people who work with youth and the community overall on how they might use this work. But I'd like to continue to think about how we could really employ these tools in meaningful ways in the university communities.
One of the key principles is dialogue. It's simply about taking more care and listening more deeply, listening not just to words but to meaning. When we start to connect on that level of meaning, we suddenly discover that actually we have the same fundamental values.
So that was Dominic Bartle and Kat Miller talking about restorative justice in a more broad context and really what does it look like to build a restorative community. Here in Hudson, New York, the conversations have mostly been around working with youth and figuring out alternatives to suspension, alternative to PINS, person in need of supervision. So I'm going to play a song. This is Have a Little Faith in Me by John Hyatt before going into the next segment. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Prison Voices Project on WGXC 90.7 FM.
When the road gets dark and you can no longer see, just let my love throw a spark and have a little faith in me. When the tears you cry believe, just give these loving arms a try, baby, and have a little faith in me, and have a little faith in me, and have a little faith in me, and have a little faith in me. When you're a secret heart I cannot speak so easily, come here, darling, from a whisper start, to have a little faith in me. And when your back's against the wall, catch you. I will catch you, fall, baby. Just have a little faith in me. And have a little faith in me. And have a little faith in me. And have a little faith in me. For such a long time, girl, expecting nothing in return, just for you to have a little faith in me. You see, time, time is our friend, 'cause for us there is no end, and all you gotta do is have a little faith in me. I said, I will hold you up, I will hold you up. Your love, give me strength enough, so have a little faith in me. I said, hey, hey, all you gotta do for me, girl, is have a little bit of faith in me. I said, hey!
That was Have a Little Faith in Me by John Hyatt. You are listening to the Prison Voices Project on WGXC 90.7 FM. And we have been talking about restorative justice here on this program, and specifically about restorative justice in youth communities, in schools, and as alternatives to going to prison for young people. So enough of grown-ups talking about young people. Let's hear an amazing youth-produced radio piece on restorative justice by the amazing and talented producers at Radio Roots. So this is produced by Radio Roots in 2010 on restorative justice. Thanks for listening to the Prison Voices Project on WGXC.
How would you handle conflict in your school?
I would get into a fight just right off the bat. To show the guy where I am, make sure that he knows my standing and that I'm not afraid. And that to me solves the problem fast, because then he knows that I'm not playing around.
Well, if someone wanted to fight me and they went out of their way to make it hard, or they kept confronting me, I would probably deal with it outside of school and not go to like a teacher or a dean or someone. I would probably handle that kind of problem on my own.
Most of us would fight.
Violent, I would start fighting or something.
Well, if it's a fight, I wouldn't fight. I just rather talk to one of the teacher or talk to that person and work it out.
What would be your punishment?
Well, they'll be suspended for maybe 2 weeks or something.
If I was caught fighting, I think I would probably be suspended for a couple of days at my school. I think that would be the extent of the punishment. I don't think I would be expelled for fighting, because fighting goes on a lot. I guess it would depend on how bad the fight was, or what I ended up doing, or if I caused harm, or if somebody was seriously injured, but I think the punishment would probably be suspension.
If I fought, I unfortunately would get suspended, but my pride would remain intact and I would continue to be respected in the school.
If a fight did happen, when security finally got there, they would break it up or whatever. But basically, when security did get there, most likely somebody was getting handcuffed, and then the other person was getting separated, or both people were getting handcuffed.
Suspensions at city schools for everything from sassing a teacher to aggressive fighting have soared 40% since 2006.
According to the Department of Education, there has been more than 72,000 suspensions through June 24th of this past school year. Hi, I'm Kim, a graduate of Lehman High School in the Bronx.
And I'm Crystal, a graduate of St. Catherine Academy High School in the Bronx. And we are your Radio Roots reporters.
Regents exams, homework, and just the word high school is enough of a burden for kids to deal with.
But suspensions, detentions, and expulsions are three of the most common words to teenagers this generation.
Austin, who is a sophomore at Columbus High School in the Bronx, explains how he got suspended.
I fought somebody. They sent me to the principal's office. They called my mom. And then my mom came in like the next day. They suspended me for like a week. And that was it. They never told me about it after that.
15-year-old Scarlett Spence of Urban Academy School for Performing Arts in Manhattan shares her experience.
I got into a couple of situations
There was one time where there was like a big fight and stuff at lunch. Even though I didn't fight, I was supposedly going down with the rest of them because I was trying to help my friend out who was inside of a fight.
Jemima Williams, who is a senior at Williamsburg Charter High School, explains how she got suspended for going to the nurse.
I was in the auditorium after the school talent show, and I had an emergency and I needed to go to the nurse. But my old guidance counselor stopped me at the door and told me I couldn't go. So when I told him it was an emergency, he said he didn't care. So I walked around him and went to the nurse. And that weekend, the principal called and told my mother I got suspended for insubordination.
Wow, that's crazy, isn't it, Kim?
If 72,000 kids were suspended this last school year alone, I doubt all of them were for really bad things. I wonder how many stories there are of kids being suspended for minor reasons.
And more importantly, I wonder how being suspended or facing that threat constantly impacts the student's learning.
Well, this is what Jemima had to say about that.
It really did make me discouraged to learn to do what I had to do, but it kind of got me disappointed at the fact that this is the way staff handle situations because it's unnecessary.
Eugene Figueroa, a math special education teacher who also works with incarcerated youth, explains how he feels schools deal with conflict.
The culture of the schools today is basically reactionary. You know, they're not interested in any way of dealing with the issue in a manner that is going to address all of the factors involved in the conflicts that arise in school. They just want to remove the child who's reacting to a situation. More often than not, that removal can constitute an arrest, okay, which is really deplorable that that's the only way they know how to deal with our kids in our schools, to have them arrested.
How many students deal with this kind of punishment on a daily basis? And why aren't we finding new ways to deal with conflict that doesn't result in immediate suspension? Donna Lieberman, who is the executive director of New York Civil Liberties Union, says what Eugene is describing is understood as a pipeline between schools and jails too many students of color are in.
The school-to-prison pipeline is the collection of policies and practices that together undermine children's ability to get an education, and instead of relying on constructive educational approaches to school discipline, treat kids as suspects, like on the street, and rely on suspensions, expulsions, and arrests instead of active responses to school disciplinary problems. The school-to-prison pipeline results in high suspension rates. It results in arrests of kids for disciplinary infractions, and it really drives kids out of school into prison instead of college.
One thing you guys should know, not all students deal with conflicts in this manner. 18-year-old Astrid, who will be starting her freshman year at Franklin and Marshall College in Pennsylvania, explains the relationship she has in her school.
In my school, it's very different than most schools. We actually have a relationship with our teachers.
Also, 15-year-old Tanisha, a sophomore at Frederick Douglass Academy 3 in the Bronx, sheds a little light on how her school takes the positive approach.
Well, in my school, some students, most of the students in my school, they get along with each other, with the teachers, and sometimes when there's an issue, the teachers might be arguing back with the students, but at the end of the day, both of them, if they both acted in a bad way, they both get in trouble by my principal. But we always have like a professional relationship.
I guess it depends on the respect and the type of relationship we have with one another.
The organization that I joined a few years ago, YMPJ, or Youth Ministries for Peace and Justice, is a youth-based organization that fights for better conditions in the South Bronx. I have actually worked on the issue of school discipline tactics a bit, and I was campaigning for alternative ways to handle conflicts at school. We came across a method called restorative justice.
Wait, what's restorative justice?
Where have you been? Restorative justice is an alternative method where students and staff together go through a dialogue process to get to the root of the conflict that arises, rather than just suspending students. Timothy Holmes, who is a youth organizer for YMPJ, explains exactly what it is.
Restorative justice is it's a method of discipline. It's a method of culture that is all about restoring relationships and not really about punishment. Not saying that punishment doesn't happen, But when situations arise, the goal of restorative justice is to rebuild relationships and to create a space of mutual respect, mutual care, and some sort of like mutual love for one another.
That is exactly what we need. Why don't we have this in all schools?
Well, YMPJ is actually trying to do that. Juan Carlos, who is the deputy executive of YMPJ, explains the first of three steps they are taking to get restorative justice in schools.
So right now we are in a conversation at many levels. There are three levels of conversations that we are involved with. At the school level, we are talking to different principals. We are talking about a way as solutions instead of giving into these punitive and zero tolerance policies in our schools, dealing with them in a different way when they make a blunder or an infraction at school.
Juan also states the second step is to develop relationships with other organizations that are working for the betterment of the Bronx, such as Sisters and Brothers United and Parents Association.
Juan Carlos again.
We believe that there is no an easy solution. So, and the solution involves all of us who are really concerned with the well-being of our students and the students themselves. So we have link arms and unite in our effort to really create an environment that is more encouraging, supportive of our students.
And the final step is to confront those who are driving and enforcing the zero tolerance policy to show them a new way of handling conflicts.
I don't know, Kim. It sounds like it can work, but do you think if it's put into schools, it will actually work?
I knew you would say that. Well, it worked for one of Eugene's students.
There was one young man name was Julio, who, when I initially met him in my advisory, Julio wanted to present himself as a gang leader and a very potentially dangerous individual. And in reality, he was a soft person. He really was. I mean, and when me and him established a relationship, and he got to know me personally, and he saw how I was, and I constantly educated him on issues of self-control and thinking things through and proper judgment, Julio began to learn very quickly that presenting himself in that fashion was not the best thing for him to do. I mean, he was in the very beginning of the school year, the first semester, I was there 4 semesters, 2 years, Julio was involved in quite a few confrontations, but that ended basically after the end of the first semester. For the next 3 semesters, he wasn't such a bad kid at all.
Eugene used to teach at a place where too many NYC public school students end up at Rikers Island. He believes that even the students he teaches at Rikers can benefit from restorative justice.
It is clear to me. I mean, I've done Rikers Island for many years, working with extremely violent adolescents that were there for felony assaults and stuff of that nature, some even murder. And I know that, I mean, not all of them will be amenable to these kind of interventions, but the majority of them will. The majority of the kids that you find in problems involving, personal conflict with their peers are amenable to intervention along the lines of restorative justice paradigm.
It can work. It even works inside of YMPJ. Juan Carlos explains.
Our goal is to model as an organization restorative justice practices. And in that way, in terms of resolving conflicts, resolving disputes, creating that alternative and modeling that alternative will serve as a blueprint for our members. We see the change. It begins with the language of responsibility, with the language of making amends, making reparations, and making it a goal to restore the relationships that are broken through any kind of violence.
Juan is right. BP, who attends Columbus High School, explains how YMPJ handled his situation with the restorative justice method.
I got in trouble, but they didn't kick me or nothing like that. What they did was they brought me to a room. They talked to me about my behavior, what I gotta do, change and all that. You feel me? So I changed and all that.
Kim, I'm convinced this can work.
I'm glad you are. But I know as a student, I'm going to continue to work to get restorative justice methods into schools. YMPJ and myself are not quitting until this happens. Juan feels we need to partner up with the Board of Education to share ideas of alternative methods and not make it a battle.
Basically, I think there is this mentality, us and them, which I think restorative justice addresses. We cannot, if we come from that framework, then maybe our enemies still will be our enemies. Our targets will be our targets. And what restorative justice does is it changes the play field.
And Eugene feels we need to flip students' ideas of handling things.
Once you turn a kid around, then you can teach them. They call it flipping them. You gotta flip them first. You gotta flip them from that negativity to a whole different way of thinking. Once you take them out of that negativity, I have kids, for example, that no longer wear their pants below their belt. Yeah, 'cause I use a variety of techniques to impress upon them how stupid that looks, how ridiculous it is, how it comes from a criminal justice environment. I mean, and I had kids that say to me, I don't wear my pants no more like that. See, no one can tell me that these things can't be done. They could be done. From the top to the bottom, from the bottom to the top, they can all be done. But it's about who's in charge and how bad they want it.
That's pretty deep.
Yeah, I actually can't agree with Eugene. It is more on the way the situation is approached that can change the outcome, which is basically the method behind restorative justice. Hopefully, schools take heed to this and change the way problems are handled in schools. Until then, we are fighting and waiting. For Radio Roots, this is Superstar Kim.
And this is Crystal.
Yeah. Padre nuestro que estás en los cielos, santificado sea tu nombre. Lord, please forgive them. If only they would listen. Relentless, they don't seek justice, they seek vengeance. Fundamentalists on both sides needing repentance. But only real community and unity can end this. Instead of reality, some get lost in The Apprentice. And the media's objective is oversaturating. They making deals with the devil and only working with Satan. Lord, grant me the patience and the strength to combat. Bring our soldiers back and please watch over our rag. In fact, Lord, watch over the globe. This is a prayer for lost souls of both friends and foes. Souls I oppose, chose to bomb the world to pieces, claiming to follow Jesus, but the truth is pieces. Never achieved the war. We kicking in doors while they stay ignoring the poor. My Lord is one of compassion and takes action. Doesn't waste his time and energy practicing gay bashing. Rather respect humanity, man. This is insanity. They killing families, creating more world tragedies. And it saddens me that there's catastrophes in your name. They're killing in vain. God, grant me the strength that I need to maintain. And help me see your vision and grant me the wisdom to understand why they killing men, women, and children. I pray for those in the buildings back in September. For their families and friends, we will always remember. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound. And through the storm, you never let me down. Because of my faith, I won't go fall to the ground. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound. Through the storm, you never let me down. Because of my faith, I won't go fall to the ground.
Begging, saying, praying, Lord, forgive me. Change I wanna see before I'm 70. Grant me serenity to love my enemies. And in the memory of my great-grandma Louise, I pursue, I fight on. My song's my mission. Eliminate conditions that put people in prison. Neighborhoods the roughest to my people in jail. Bodies now commodities, 'cause the system done failed. Politics and justice, lift the poverty's veil. Spit the truth for the youth and the working class male. Females across the globe left out in most songs. Human shields, rums, fell dumped. War criminals, my warlords like Charles Taylor. Granted asylum, while my cousins and my aunties die from the violence. Keep your head up, we'll triumph. As time went, eyes on progress and keep promise. Democrats disbanded, now the new Republicans. You ask them, the years faulty, this two-party system. Legalized lynching, ran by rich white men, government and henchmen. You speaking, they arrested, no choice if you're pregnant. 100,000 cents, paint the picture bright like Paul Goodnight. The struggle to fight, the love of life, the wrong from right. The high price, the tunnel, the light, the will, the might, the sacrifice, the blood, the strife. But what you get is your life, come on.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound. And through the storm, you never let me down. Because of my faith, I won't go fall to the ground. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound. And through the storm, you never let me down. Because of my faith, I won't go fall to the ground. I once was lost, but now I'm found.
I once was lost, but now I'm found. I once was lost, but now I'm found. I once was lost, but now I'm found.
That is Truth by Foundation, The Foundation, and you are listening to the Prison Voices Project on WGXC. Today's show is about restorative justice, but I have a few announcements to make. So for those of you who are interested in continuing this conversation on restorative justice, on Monday, June 17th, at the Hudson, tentatively at the Hudson Chamber of Commerce at 5:30 p.m., there will be a follow-up conversation on implementing a restorative justice process here in Hudson, New York. If you'd like more information, you can email me at the prisonvoicesproject@gmail.com. And speaking to this theme about war and prisons and the relationship, there's going to be a conference that's taking place this weekend in Greenwich, New York, which is north of Albany. And the conference is specifically addressing the plight of the United States Armed Forces and members whose arrests are and their imprisonment are a direct result of combat related to post-traumatic stress disorder. So it's called When Johnny Comes Marching Home and Gets Arrested: From Honor to Dishonor and Back Again. You can find out more information on this at www.inourname.org. Once again, this is a conference that will take place this weekend north of Albany in Greenwich, discussing specifically when members of the armed forces face arrest and imprisonment as a direct result to combat-related post-traumatic stress disorder. What the other event that I had mentioned is taking place in Hudson, New York, not this weekend, but the following weekend, and it's History, Art, and Dialogue About Life in a Girl's Prison, June 8th and 9th in Hudson, New York. Please join the Prison Public Memory Project and Historic Hudson for If These Walls Could Talk, an exploration of life inside the New York State Training School for Girls in Hudson, New York. This is part of the Path Through History weekend, June 8th and 9th. The main events will include an art installation inside several rooms at the Dr. Oliver Bronson House, a National Historic Landmark, which beginning in the 1920s served as a superintendent's residence, staff social space, and work site for the girls incarcerated at the training school. The installation draws from a rich variety of historical documents and images from local collections and national sources to provide a fascinating glimpse into the stories of several young women kept at the Hudson Training School, including young Ella Fitzgerald. Also on the program at regular intervals throughout both days are facilitated discussion circles with training school alumni, providing opportunities for guests to talk with people who lived and worked at the training school and their family members, providing an inside view of life at this historic institution and an opportunity to reflect on what has and has not changed over time in juvenile justice policy and practice. Hard copies of several annotated bibliographies of books, articles, and other sources of historical information on the Hudson Training School prepared by the Prison Public Memory Project will be available for community members and visitors interested in pursuing their own investigations. So this is If These Walls Could Talk, History, Art, and Dialogue About Life in a Girl's Prison, Saturday, June 8th and Sunday, June 9th, 2013, 10 to 5 p.m. at Dr. Oliver Bronson's house. That's 50 Worth Avenue in Hudson, New York. And it's open to the public. There's no charge for admission. So hope that you can make it. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Prison Voices Project and our show on restorative justice. This conversation will continue, hopefully with more action and less talking. Get your pen and paper out. As we close the show, you'll hear the address for the Prison Voices Project. Write us a letter if you're tuning in and you're listening and you'd like to hear something different or you want to tell us what you thought of today's show. We'd love to get letters from you. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great day. You have been listening to the Prison Voices Project, a radio storytelling project highlighting the voices of people impacted by the prison system. The Prison Voices Project airs on the second and fourth Thursday of every month from 10 to 11 a.m. on WGXC Hands-On Community Radio, 90.7 FM in Greene and Columbia counties. If you are listening to the program and would like to share your story, or you have ideas for the program, please write to us at 704 Columbia Street, 2nd floor, Hudson, New York, 12534. If you have feedback about what you have just heard, you can email us at feedback@wgxc.org. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Ashley Lair from Germantown, New York. You're listening to WGXC.